Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 702, February 2024.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell. This is going to be one of these rare episodes where we talk about a sitcom. I mean, we don't do that a lot. Have we done? I think we've done that before, but not very often. But this is a sitcom that I think is firmly in our wheelhouse because it is a genre sitcom. And then also in our wheelhouse because, one, it's a British sitcom. And then, two, it's also an American sitcom. What? There's a lot to talk about. And I will say, also, they're both very good comedies and TV shows, and you should watch them. We're talking about Ghosts. Yes.
Oh, I thought we were talking about The Office.
It could be, or All in the Family, or right. Sanford and Son. Right. There's many options.
So many.
But no. Right.
Or Call Me Cat.
Yeah, sure. But it's not. It's Ghosts. Surprise to everyone. Let me introduce my panelists who are going to talk about Ghosts, and we're going to talk about them in a lightly spoilery fashion to try to convince you to watch one or both of them, and then we'll fire off the spoiler horn and maybe get into a little more detail. Although, can you spoil a sitcom? I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, maybe you can. Cicero Holmes, you heard him. He's here. Hi, Cicero.
Hi, Jason. I keep hearing Chumbawamba. Is that a problem?
I mean, I don't see anybody. I don't know if there's a problem at all. Annette Weirstra is here. Hello.
Hello. You're going to want to hug the bear, but don't.
Interesting.
Don't do it.
Erica Ensign is also here. Hello.
Coming to you from Alberta to talk about Alberta.
Oh, nice. And I went down in the basement and there's somebody down here. It's Heather Berberet. Hi, Heather.
Yeah, don't go to the basement. I mean, though, it's very friendly down there in a very scary way.
All right. So I'm going to give Erica some bonus points here.
Woo!
Because she suggested we do an episode about ghosts. I'm not going to take away those bonus points because I said, yes, Erica, you should schedule that and host that yourself. Uh-huh. And that did not happen. But then I watched it and I was like, okay, the statute of limitations has lapsed on Erica's suggestion. I'm going to just schedule an episode about ghosts. Ghosts started out, so there was a comedy troupe collective maker of TV shows in Britain called Them There. They did a show called Horrible Histories that is my friend Simon's daughter Lexi's favorite, was her favorite show when she was young. But they decided to make a little more adult targeted sitcom, and they made Ghosts for the BBC. And then that went, like, I think CBS immediately bought it and said, we would like to do an American version of this. And that is a hit in the US, about, as we record this, about to start its third season, I believe.
Yep.
So the premise of both shows is that a young couple inherits, through wacky means, inherits an old mansion. And then again, through wacky means, namely a basically
wackier means.
Bump to the head, the wife of the husband and wife couple is hit, conked on the noggin, not by a coconut, but now she has a near-death experience, and now she can see ghosts. And boy, there are a lot of ghosts in that old, old mansion. And that's the premise. So the premise is essentially, I think the people who did the original British version, they thought, like, the premise is really, what if a bunch of ghosts were trapped together for eternity and and they would bump off each other in various ways and play off each other, and that would be very funny. I think what both shows have learned is that the delight of it and the thing that makes it a sort of a special show, both of them special, is by having one person in the real world, in the living, be able to communicate with them, it opens up a whole other storytelling set of possibilities because there's now a dynamic element, but also because nobody else who's alive can see them, there is a complicating element. And it's just, every time I watch it, I think, this is such a good premise for a TV show because there's so much you can mine with it. Like sometimes you see a sitcom and you think, how could they do 1,000 episodes of that sitcom? And you know, it's CBS, so they will. But but with this, you really can. So anyway, that's what struck me. I don't know if anybody else would like to talk a little bit about what the secret sauce is in Ghosts, but I think it's just such a very clever premise that gives you an ensemble of ghosts, but also ties it into the real world so that it's not the same. We aren't stuck in the droning boredom of eternity with the ghosts that they have obviously lived up until now. Now things have gotten interesting, and that's when the show starts.
Yeah, I agree. It is. And I think that it's such a great premise. And if it's not executed well, it could still be a not great show. And I think on both sides of the pond, they do a fantastic job of interrogating the premise to such a degree that when they sort of add something new to the mythos, it's like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense. And it all flows together really well. And the casting and the characters, and they make different character choices in terms of what eras the ghosts are from on either side of the pond. And I like the way that, you know, some of them are old enough, like they died long enough ago that they don't know a lot of things and things need to be explained to them. And some of them are more modern. And the casting is also fantastic. These characters all really work very well together, which was really one of my favorite parts of the show, because I didn't think I was going to like this show at all, because I was like, this is a terrible premise in terms of the wackiness factor.
Yep.
I was like, oh, this is not a thing I'm going to like, but it's ghosts. Like, it's literally ghosts. It's about ghosts. So I was like, I will try watching it. And by the end of the second episode, I was basically hooked. The first episode in both of them is pretty much the same, and it doesn't quite get into, it's like the bump on the head happens, and then the seeing ghosts is toward the end of that first episode. Right. And then it's the second episode where you really actually get to see the one person can see the ghosts and the other person can't see the ghosts, and how that works out.
Comedy.
Yep. And then each ghost has, like, most of them have their own little superpowers. And I love that idea that in addition to being a character from a specific time with a specific personality type, you know, very sitcom-y, that like some of them also have things they can do, like be heard or right. in the real world or
limited
seen,
impact
or,
on the real world.
Yes. Very limited, very but limited. Just enough so that it works in hilarious ways. So yeah, I was thrilled that both versions of the show were so good. And I think if you are a fan of British humor, you'll probably like that one better. If you're a fan of US humor, you'll probably like that one better. But they're both great.
They're
like
both
the US
really
side. Yeah, the US one is very, it's more like, you know, the British humor is, it's very tightly edited. It's very like staccato sort of in the way that it plays out. Mm-hmm. And the US style is much more loosey-goosey and sort of flowy and a little bit like, I think the British one is silly and the U.S. one is wacky.
The hijinks in the American version, yep. I think, is something that you
you'd right, say. The shenanigans in the right, British version, the hijinks right, in the American right, version.
Yes. So what I think what struck me is not only Erica's right, like the shows diverge, you know, they're kind of divergent styles, but in addition to that, what's interesting is where they're divergent, right? So in the American version, it goes for a lot of episodes, right? So, I mean, I think first season 16 and the second 22, it's 18. Yeah.
As soon as it's a hit, it's going to be the max number, right? Because it's CBS. So in right. an ideal, mm-hmm. no writer strikes or anything, they're going to crank out 22 of these a year.
Right.
For as long as it remains profitable.
And mm-hmm. and what I was surprised by was at about the 5 or 6 episode mark, at about the point where I felt like, okay, they've run the ghost joke kind of dry, right? Like they've got to, you know, get over that hill. In the American version, I was really dubious as to whether or not they would be able to figure out ways to keep it funny and keep it fresh. And they have. Mm-hmm. And I think what they did was, you know, they leaned very much into the characters, into,
and added
you know,
more.
You, delve really deeply into the characters and the pathos of all of the ghosts that are there. And they've done really great jobs with that. And they've added a lot of heart to this show in the American version. In the British version, I feel like it's almost like the humans that are there, the livings in the British version came straight out of It's Always Sunny. They're kind of degenerates, but they're well-meaning degenerates.
Oh, see, I thought it was the other way around. I find the British folks much kinder and the U.S. kind of mean in terms of the couples that live there. I loved Rose McIver on iZombie, and I was so excited to see her here. And then I was like, I don't like her. She's not very nice. And eventually I came around, but it took me a long time to sort of warm to her because she felt like the, I don't know, the ugly American a little bit.
Well, yeah. So I guess not very, very slight spoilers for, and matter of fact, no spoilers for the British version. The reason that I say that is because there were, in the American version, they gave both of the livings careers, right? That, you know, they left New York, they went up to upstate New York, and they both had careers that they could lean on. Right. And the writers leaned on them using their skills in ways to either help make the money or do things that were productive a lot earlier into the show than in the British. In the British one, we still have no idea what they actually did prior to inheriting this home. And a lot of the things that they did early in the show, especially in the first season, was trying to figure out ways to scheme extra money to make this place better, so that they can open up this hotel that they aspire to open. And that included telling some,
stretching the truth a little bit.
Right, stretching the
There's
truth.
There's one where the ghosts go on strike and Allison and Mike basically have to fake ghost things that are completely fraudulent, and then they get in trouble for it. That felt very British to me, by the way. Then they're going to be caught out and incredibly embarrassed by this. I was like, oh yeah, this is a British sitcom.
Yes.
Yep.
But yeah, so I think that's where I was looking at, like, oh yeah, that, like, this is, I love British humor because they allow themselves that room for nuance, even on television shows. They're like, oh, okay, yeah. Like, our heroes aren't going to be perfect. They're going to do things that you would think about doing. And they're going to come out and there are going to be some bad repercussions for the things that they've done. But, it's not going to be catastrophic. And you can still like these people, even though they weren't, the complete baby faces that we'd wind up seeing on American, in American shows, where you got to teach a lesson all the time or be virtuous all the time.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I think another piece of the secret sauce is the two worlds of the livings and the ghost have like completely separate tracks and also completely intertwined tracks. So that gives you a lot of things to explore in terms of plot and relationships. So you'll have things going on with the hotel and with Sam and Jay or Allison and Mike, and then completely different plots going on that, Sam and Allison are the only ones who can see what's happening and sort of become that bridge between the stories. And sometimes they sync up very nicely in like plot wise and synchronistic sort of ways that feel very satisfying. And sometimes they just don't. There's just different things happening and all of this going on at the same time that creates a certain amount of chaos and like keeps you engaged all in like a very short time frame. Cause I do enjoy watching things that are like, 20, 30 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And I just find it gives the stories a lot of energy. So when you say, especially in the US, when there's like, already been 30 some episodes.
41.
I'm looking forward to I'm ready for the next one. I'm kind of sad the British one's over because I would have watched like multiple more seasons of what's happening in that house too.
It's kind of like upstairs, downstairs, but it's this world, that world.
Yeah, the A plot and the B plot don't necessarily intersect other than through the one person who can see both sides, which is part of the brilliance of it. I mean, one of the really cleverly done ways that the show is built, both versions of the show, is the hard cuts between the ghosts being there and not being there.
Yes. So
as an audience, you can, it is just instant comedy to have like all the ghosts are doing things and it's really driving the one character who can see the ghosts crazy. And then you cut and it's just her and maybe her husband and it's silent. And it's very funny because then you get the other perspective of like, this person is reacting to nothing, right? We know the ghosts are there, but then you do the cut and it's done so well. I think one of the reasons that I really warmed to the American version, which I saw first, is there is a moment where I think maybe most of us felt this, which is it's a sitcom. It's a sitcom premise. And I said this at the very beginning. Sometimes you get the sitcom premise and you're like, okay, what can they do with this? Right? Like they're going to be new jokes, but like the premise of Friends doesn't change a lot, right? It's just, there's some different situations, but the jokes are, you know, it's fine. But this show, it struck me somewhere in the first season, I think of the US version of Ghosts, that it started to remind me more of something like the podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern, which is an improv podcast, but basically it's a fantasy podcast. And when they improv a fact about how the magical world works, it's canon. And from that point on, you're like, oh, well, this is a rule now. And one of the things that I've really appreciated about watching Ghosts, especially the American version, is they very carefully, I think, drop in, not just for comedic effect, but for like show structure effect, new rules as they go. And it's great because you're like, okay, I know what the show's gonna be for the next 1,000 episodes on CBS. It's fine. And then in episode 12 they'll be like, oh, did you know about this thing that happens with ghosts? And you're like, what? And then everything is a little bit different, and it's so clever. And that's because it's a genre show, right? They are not dealing with the rules of our human world, our real world. Instead, it's the supernatural world where they can make up whatever rules make the show interesting. And they do. And I really appreciate that about it, that just when you think you might be a little complacent, they'll introduce a new character, or there'll be a new thing that ghosts can do, or that can happen to ghosts, or that happened in the past, and then off you go. I think it's very clever. Let me take a little break to tell you about our sponsor. This episode of The Incomparable is brought to you by porkbun.com. And you're saying to yourself, what kind of name is that? What's going on there? Who in the world is porkbun.com? They are not going to send you a pork bun. Pork Bun was named the number one domain name registrar by USA Today. And honestly, it's easy to see why. They offer hundreds of domain extensions at low prices. There's powerful web hosting options and personalized support 365 days a year. That's all the days. They've got a domain extension that's perfect for anything you're into. Of course, they have .com domains. Who doesn't? But they've also got .quest, .gg, .blog, .games, and so many more. They got it all. Plus, every domain name from Pork Bun comes with a ton of freebies like SSL certificates, Whois privacy, URL forwarding, web and email hosting trials, and so much more, because the people at Pork Bun don't believe you should have to pay for things that should be free. Right now, listeners of The Incomparable can get $1 off their next domain name from porkbun.com when they click the link in our description. Go to porkbun.com and use code TheIncomparable24 at checkout. Grab the domain name you want and start sharing what you're passionate about. Porkbun.com, code TheIncomparable24, or just click the link in the description. Thank you to Porkbun for supporting The Incomparable.
Often those rules are against trope or against type and unexpected, right? So the older, the more thousands of years the character has been around, the more savvy, the more hip, the more knowledgeable they are. So they're always, I think, going against type and trope, which is part of how they make everything so interesting and keep everything really fresh and alive and energetic.
And one of the reasons I really love that the... that they did a US version of this is because of the more episodes, because it gives them more space to investigate more of those little changes and those little things. So, for example, you find out in the first episode of first or second episode of both of them that the wife can see ghosts everywhere. Like, it's not just at the house. There's also like a ghost doctor. And in the US version, they open up the plot a little bit so that they actually go other places to specifically find other ghosts and talk to other ghosts for plot reasons that are usually related to the ghosts that are back at the house.
Right.
And so that's another way to sort of broaden the universe and, like, you know, see what are ghosts like at a diner or a strip club or, you know, something like that. So you can.
Or a ghost who died in the car and has to stay with the car.
That's one of those great new things, right? Yeah. A car exactly. Ghost. One of our characters. In the US version, Sass, his unrequited love, I think, is at a different location in town. But she just
the newspaper factory.
Yeah,
or something,
but she
like
can't just show up at the newspaper office and talk into the air, right? And yet, that is the thing that they want. They want to, you know, communicate using her as an intermediary. But yeah, the car ghost is such a clever idea. She's trapped in the car, and there is a whole plot about reconciling with a dead relative by going to the place that they are haunting. You get the whole premise change about how they can actually, when they're need is fulfilled, they are sucked off, hilarious, to heaven. And then there's also like, and then can go to hell or be called back from hell. There's some like details there about that allows for a little more dynamic kind of things in the ghost world. Like, it's just, it's super clever. And then, like, again, as a fan of genre fiction, I look at that and I'm like, see, that's why it's so rich, is that by introducing a world where the rules are undetermined, you, the storyteller, can make them up in ways that make your story better. And Ghost does that, right? Like, they don't, they're like, no, the rules are fixed. It's like, nope. If they want to make a new rule, they just make a new rule, but then they have to follow it, which they do.
And so in the British version, there's a subplot where Mike and Allison are about to get a windfall, so they're looking for a new place to live, which is a call back to the pilot, where they're looking for a flat, and they're using the same real estate agent, and at one point they wind up going to the penthouse, and then there are two ghosts sitting on a ledge, or no, there were pirates, I guess.
They're like in the air. They're German.
And they were just, they were German
pilots who were
pilots.
Shot down in World War II. And they're like, hey, somebody can see us. Hey. Right. And she's like, nope.
Right.
Not living here.
They're just in the air. Sitting there in the air.
And everywhere has ghosts, especially in the UK. Like, I think that's one thing about the difference between the US and the UK is that the history is different. And so they have to make some different choices with the characters. But that is such a great moment in the UK episode where they're like, oh, we're going to be able to get out of here. Finally, I'll have some peace and quiet. And everywhere she goes, she sees ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Oh. One of the pieces I really appreciate, too, is how they use the husbands, Mike and Jay. Mm-hmm. So at first, it's, you know, one, they do a really nice progression. At first, they're really weirded out every time the wives, Allison and
Sam,
thank you. Start talking. And by the end, as the seasons go on, they just get on their phone every time she starts talking to the air and everything. But they also continue to make these just very clever ways that this person who lives with these ghosts and has relationships with these ghosts, who he's never seen them, right? Never talked to them, but they just find these it's super interesting ways. So I don't want to do spoilers, but there, you know, for instance, will, if he has to give a message from the wife, and they do, I think they do this in both versions, he'll, the ghosts know that they can hear the answering machine. So he'll call and leave a message on the answering machine. The ghosts will all run to hear what comes out on the answering machine. And the husband will be like, ghosts, are you there? So I'm supposed to tell you.
Don't they write in the steam on the mirror?
Yes.
Yes, they write. Yes. They do. Yeah. All these clever interactions over and over, I just think is wonderful. The other thing that I think this show does, it's actually a show I recommend to, I'm a therapist, I recommend to my clients, is this show is very engaging and very entertaining, but very low intensity. Despite the fact that it's dealing with death, it's very low stakes, right?
They're already dead.
They're already dead. In the British version, there is a guy who walks around with his head chopped off, but even those visuals are not particularly gross. Like, there's not a lot of blood and guts.
And there is one in the US version as well, but he disappears after like the first episode, doesn't come back.
That's right.
In the woods.
So it's just very low stakes, right? There's your heart's not going to get pounding. You're not going to be at the edge of your seat.
The only stakes really is, are the couple going to be able to make it work with this thing they've inherited? But that's it.
Is somebody going to think that Allison/Sam is totally insane?
It's totally like, nuts.
That's it.
If they catch her talking to ghosts. Right. So I tend to kind of say, well, you know, some really good TV you might enjoy. I recommend Bake Off and Ghosts, either version, right? Where it's like, the biggest thing is they're going to throw away their ice cream cake because they got too upset and get kicked off the show.
The UK version, at least at the beginning, there is some attempt to make it be scary in the sense like the music, and there are some jump scare kind of things where Allison doesn't expect there to be ghosts, and then there's a ghost, and then they play against that where you expect there to be a ghost and there isn't a ghost. But I think both shows very quickly are like, like they just live there. It's funnier that they're mundane, that the ghosts are mundane. Right. They're just people who have annoying things about them. They're trapped in whatever, clothes they wore when they die. and they're sort of like locked in eternity, which is fascinating, right? From another show dynamic, that you've got people who have been there for, in some cases, a very long time, but they are also products of their era and kind of trapped. And so seeing them interact with our characters who are in the present day is fascinating, because there's a suggestion that maybe it's allowing them to grow and progress in a way where they were static before. They might be able to finally reach the point where they can move on to whatever, or get sucked off to whatever the next level is. And I think it's a really, so you get to have it both ways, where they're like, for example, like you'll be a character in the British version. There's the MP, he's from the 90s. So he's like, cell phones and all that. But his vision of them is very different from the modern day, but it's more up to date than somebody from the Victorian era. And so you end up with that. But then you also get this thing where they're playing movies and TV shows for them, because they love it, right? Now that they can request TV shows and they just watch TV shows, you're babysitting the ghosts. It's just such a great combination.
Yeah, it's interesting too, like the concept of like hell is other people and these poor souls who have not moved on. Like at the beginning, they have been trapped together. I rewatched the first episode of the US version yesterday, and it was like the characters didn't even really know each other all that well on a super personal level. So it really gave me that, like, you know, this must be purgatory for them. They're just trapped here and they don't care about the rest of these people. But then when they have, you know, the spanner in the works, the throne or the wrench, if you're in the US version, then you get a person who can actually, a living, who can interact with them. And that brings them together in really interesting ways. So Jason, like you said, you get new ways that the rules work, but you also get these characters discovering new things about each other. And that's fine, because they didn't actually talk to each other in this way and interact with each other in this way, because there was no reason for them to. They didn't have any one thing to rally around, and now they do. And it, you know, you could find yourself thinking, well, they've been, you know, there for, you know, decades or hundreds of years. How do they not know this about each other? Well, it's because they never had anybody to pull them together.
They've been repeating in their loop and doing, you know, essentially the same. That's the implication. They don't really say it, but like clearly they just do. They know something about each other, but not much. And they just are kind of like being who they're being and doing who they're doing. And it really is the fact that the modern living person can see them that sort of like sets everything off. And that helps, right? Because it's a show. And if she saw them and they're like, oh yeah, we worked out all our stuff hundreds of years ago, there wouldn't be a show. Right. But because they're ghosts, I kind of buy it, right? Like they're kind of on autopilot until the living world intervenes, at which point things get really interesting because now their lives are all kind of shaken up. And also they can learn about the internet and watch TV shows and stuff. And and that changes who they are too.
I just want to say that I really appreciate the Pat/Pete character. He is the troop leader who winds up with an arrow through his neck.
Such a comedy gag.
Yes. So the in both versions, they kind of go through the I don't even know, like the Rube Goldberg machine that is the death throes of that character. In the British version, it's hysterical. They really do a great job. But not only is that character very funny, but I think it's also very earnest. And I want to say that that character's arc in both shows, but specifically on the American show, where they've had much more time to kind of flesh it out and play with his story, has been the character that has made me really physically cry. Just because his story is so touching and he is so earnest and the way that he's behaving and the things that have happened and the way that he grows is so believable that it really does. I'm shocked at how poignant and how effective the emotional pull is on that character in the show itself.
Well, his family is still alive, right? So that's right. Where a lot of that poignancy comes from, is his wife is still alive. His kids have grown up and got a
grandkid.
The more modern characters have this, they're locked in place, right? Like when he sees his wife, because they come to where he died on the anniversary of his death, but she's an old lady now, right? He's still young because he died in the 80s and hasn't changed since then. But and you see that, and the MP Julian in the British version, similarly, he discovers that his daughter has grown up, and that's very touching, right? Because he's a egomaniac who never spent any time with his family, and suddenly actually feels some regret about that, which took him long enough, but also discovers that his daughter is now an MP as well for this Green Party. He doesn't know what that's about, but whatever. it can be very touching for those. And you do find also sort of distant, like in the American version, there is this brilliant kind of like spooling out plot about how Alberta, the singer from Speakeasy era, and like she was murdered. And so there's this kind of like, who killed her, and was it somebody she knew or was in a relationship with or a relative, and that kind of goes on. And that it's a similar thing, but it's a little more removed because it's so far after the fact versus just seeing your loved ones and they're still alive and you're not because you're a ghost now. It's remarkable.
I want to add to that because I think the thing you get to see with that story about Alberta and some of the other plots is that they can't find out anything more when they're stuck in the spot without someone who they can talk to and communicate with the outside world.
Right.
So they can't investigate what happened to her. And then slowly we also learn other things about other people and how they died and what happened with their life. And so it's sort of, and I think the U.S. version has more time to do this, right, and they've done this more. But with like Alberta, the other fun thing is you have this person who is like an expert, a historian on Alberta comes, and you have this great contrast for the, this is what the world is saying about you, but this is what her experience is. And you can have those two things playing off each other in a really funny and also touching way. And so as her story is revealed,
Sam has an
opportunity. Yeah, on a podcast. And Sam has the opportunity to correct the record for her and sort of tell her story in a way that no one could if you weren't talking to the ghost of Alberta Haynes, but you can't say that you're talking to her. So it creates like such good dramatic tension and then allowing for a richer storytelling from both the perception of how we see history and how a person who lived the history is going to see it.
Well, along those lines, we've got Captain Isaac Higgintoot, right, mm-hmm. in the U.S. version. Mm-hmm. and what's his name in the U.K. version?
It's a joke that you don't know until much, 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 much later.
Yeah, he's just called the captain.
Every
he's
time somebody's about to say his name, they cut
the
away.
Captain.
So that he's oh, just the captain.
Oh, that's right. That's why yeah, I yep. don't know his name.
He's yeah. the captain.
Okay. There we go. The captain. Anyway, these are, is this a spoiler
no,
if
it's,
I say they're
it's
a main
okay.
storyline?
I don't want to like give away like major things that happen like the end okay. of the British version, but we can talk about it.
Yeah. Okay.
These are both closeted gay men.
Gay men, which I think particularly in the US version that I don't know that those, that they ever would have come to under, you know, really been able to explore that piece of themselves if it hadn't been for being able to be seen in this, exactly this interaction that you guys are talking about. But in the American version, he gets to have a romance with the British soldier that was killed at the shed on the property, right?
Him,
yeah. And they get to have this whole relationship.
That's one of those plot twists, right? Which is like, oh, didn't you know that there are British soldiers out there in this other building? And you're like, what? Okay.
What? And so we get to have the whole, Revolutionary War, right? Reenacted essentially between these two. But another way that they get to, that's another way that we get to see this growth and development of their personalities and their life path because of the modern influence. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. One of the things that Cicero, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about just the US style versus the UK style, you mentioned like the American sort of virtue. You can't have a totally bad guy. And that is something that I noticed, too, in the characters of Julian versus Trevor. You have a besuited fellow with no pants.
Right.
Both versions. And Julian Julian is the British MP who he had a heart attack while he was stripping his secretary at a like a work party. And he's very, very just like unapologetically kind of not a very virtuous guy.
No,
he's in the very first episode, the way that the wife gets knocked on the head is he pushes her out a window.
Right.
Whereas in the US version, she trips on a vase and falls down the stairs. So like you get that right there. It's a lot pointier in the British version because he's just not a nice guy, even though he does discover, like you said, Jason, about his daughter. And he softens a bit and it's nice to see. But then in the US version, Trevor's sort of like the frat bro
He's a dude bro.
Yeah. He's a stockbroker frat boy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Finance guy. And you think like you just assume that it's the same reason that he has no pants on because he was getting it on with some hot chick that probably looks like Tara Reid because he has such a thing for Tara Reid.
Right.
It turns out
the year 2000. Yeah, we get it. OK.
But it turns out he actually has this completely different backstory than you expect based on his demeanor. Mm-hmm. And he's just like really kind of a softy and a very nice guy. And most times just chooses to do the right thing, even though he does it in the most bro-y fashion possible.
Right.
So it's like that is to me is the biggest delineation between the UK version and the US version,
sure.
like right there in those two characters. But
toxic masculinity who's trying to get, mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of the theme of both of these is that once they're interacting with our modern world, there are a lot of assumptions that are made like, Captain Isaac being able to accept and express that he's gay. It is about Trevor being opening up a little bit and not necessarily having to be as much of a bro. Mm-hmm. And it's also Hetty, the great performance, Rebecca Wysocki. Like she's super uptight as a lady of the manor, that same character is a kitty in the British version.
Right.
And in the UK, in the US version, like Hetty also like
Fanny.
Gets to be a little like take advantage of being more modern as time goes on. And it's all just about them like adapting to and accepting the modern world that has moved on and they can like let go of some of their hangups, which they have not ever been able to let go of.
Hetty learns about the washing machine.
She does. It vibrates.
Yes, she does.
If you get my meaning, it vibrates. I wanted to mention, we're talking about casting. I think shows also live and die by their casting and that these shows are both well cast.
Yes.
But I wanted to mention the weird thing about watching the UK version when I did is many of the people on these on that show were Taskmaster contestants.
Really?
And especially Charlotte Ritchie, who is a very funny as Allison, the female lead of the show. She was a Taskmaster contestant. And Kyle Smith-Bino, one of my very favorite Taskmaster contestants, is Mike. And then in the cast, Katie Wicks, who is the witch trial victim, who if you walk through her, everything smells like it's burning. She's also a Taskmaster contestant. I think there's at least one other Taskmaster contestant in the show. Anyway, so I've seen these people before, but honestly, having seen them on Taskmaster before seeing them in Ghosts, it was like I was rooting for them. It's like, oh, you got a show. Do it good. Oh, you're doing it good. Good job, Kyle Smith-Bino, who, like, again, hilarious on Taskmaster. And also, he's great as Mike. He's it's fun to see people I'd already seen on a game show, and now they're on a real show. But I think that both of these, and then ironically, Utkarsh Ambudkar, who is Jay on the US version, has since been on Celebrity Jeopardy. So it went the other way.
Oh. Wow.
So they like they're coming and going. They're on game shows and then they're on shows. And like I don't even know what's going on. But I just wanted to put that in. I love Charlotte Ritchie and Kyle Smith-Bino especially. I think they're really, really great in the UK version of Ghosts.
Yeah, I love them. I also love Ben Willebond as the captain, and we watched the thick of it on repeat in this household over and over again, and he is in one season of that show as a very different character from the captain, a very sweary character, and yeah, it's just like these actors are like they're so good at what they do, and it's fun to see them doing other things. So I feel like I kind of, in both versions, want to just seek out stuff that all of these actors are doing elsewhere because I just think every one of them is excellent, except for the headless guy in the US version who you never see.
No, he's off in the woods.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Can we talk about Flower for a minute? Because my she's one of my favorite ghosts, and particularly her thing. Her shtick is one of my favorite shticks.
She's a hippie.
Flower's a hippie that apparently was killed by a bear.
A bear, yeah.
A bear when she was high. So yes. When Flower walks through you, you get high.
Yes.
So,
and she's permanently high because she died high. And,
right. Yes. Died high. So to use, I think, to great effect in the ghost plots and occasionally in Allison's plots at times. And I just think Flower is really fun. But I don't know if the writers mean to do this, to be a little serious, but I think Flower is also used a little bit to talk about trauma because Flower can be quite high and Flower can also come into reality when she needs to.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think Flower often chooses to be high so that she doesn't have to know what's going on around her and doesn't have to know that she's not dead but not in heaven and doesn't have to remember she was killed by a bear. And so I think Flower's got a lot more to her than she gets credit for.
It's strongly implied that Flower, when we meet her, we think, oh, she's just permanently high and she's a hippie.
Right.
I think as the show goes on, it's strongly implied that at least to a certain degree, it is her choice to retreat into that to avoid
right.
complications and connections with other people.
She is very much in on the joke.
Yeah.
Yep. And she her background is like there's some actual trauma there that's not related to the bear. So
yeah.
Good point.
So one of my favorite characters on the American version is Thor, a Viking who has wandered in from Norway and got left behind. And we find later that his son, Bjorn, is actually nearby and he can see him like in the window of the house across the way, which is also kind of hilarious. You got to get the right angle. He can make electrical things flicker, but he is, it's very broad, but I also like that he is also trying to improve as a human being and get over some of his more aggressive Vikingness. And I like him a lot, and he's sort of romantically paired with Flower in ways that are frustrating and also funny. So I like Thor. What I didn't expect when I watched the UK version is how much I love Robin, the caveman, who is the equivalent of Thor, who has seen everything. Like Thor has been there. Well, Thor and Sass, who is an indigenous person, is a Lenape,
he's a Lenape.
Native American, also has been there a very long time.
But he's 500 years old, and Thor is like 1,000.
1,000, yeah. But in the UK version, you've got a caveman, like literally a caveman, Robin. And I love him so much. I love that he worships the moon. I love that when they discover that people landed on the moon, he's like, what? And then goes down a YouTube rabbit hole of conspiracy theories. The point about Robin too is Robin, they play it as like he doesn't speak English very well because he comes from a time before there was even like understandable language, but also has been has been a ghost for so long now that he's actually wise.
So right.
In his way, I don't know. I love that character a lot. I like Thor. Thor is hilarious, but Robin is also is a lot like Thor in some ways, but less aggressive and more sweet. And I just think both of those characters are great, and that they're counterparts of each other is just fine.
Robin is more impish, right?
Yes.
Where he will
hides in the refrigerator to scare people.
Exactly. Like he is very deliberate about the things that he does. The one confusing portion of or the thing that was constantly making my mind churn watching the British version was, I don't know if it's an intentional obfuscation or if it's just because I don't know, British history as well as, you know, as I do American history. It is so difficult to place the time periods of where people are in the show. Robin is easy.
Yeah, I think that's a thing that if you were in the UK, you'd probably know it a little better. The thing, before we move on from Robin to the other time periods, I just want to say that he is my favorite character on both of the shows. And I think it's interesting how some of the characters have very direct analogs and some of them are sort of like twisted and turned. I actually think Robin, in some ways, he's obviously the Thor-ish character, but in some ways, he's the flower-ish character. When you're thinking about how she leans into being high all the time, Robin has been there for like 8,000 years and has seen so many ghosts come and go. And, you know, yeah, he doesn't speak English well, but boy, his French is very fluent. and he is sometimes he's just like the impish caveman and he has a friend, a mouse family that he says hi to on the stairs and he likes to watch ants or whatever. But sometimes he's incredibly wise and sometimes he's rattling off the Pythagorean theorem and sometimes he is like chasing rabbits through the forest. And I think that in the same way that Flower is sort of leaning into what she needs to be able to sort of get through this, Robin is leaning into whichever part of his personality best serves him to be able to continue living or not living,
right.
Unliving
yes.
through all of this.
Right. Existing through it all. Right. He calls the dogs. He does it all.
Those powers too, right? He can talk to animals. There's everybody.
He can also make lights flicker.
The lady of the house appears in photographs, right? That's a thing we discover. Like everybody's got something like that, isn't it? Is it Alberta who ends up? She can talk to Alexa,
right? Yes. Right.
What a great idea! Like
it's like every time you think, I wonder how this would work, or why haven't the characters tried this yet? Eventually, they do.
They do. They do. It's very clever.
I also enjoy sort of the ghost choir in the basement of both houses.
Yes.
The cholera victims and the plague victims.
Yes.
And I think it's a wise choice to have them in the basement and not trying to have them as regular characters that are there all the time. But it's like every once in a while they come in really useful and you go down or you bring one of them up. And it's just sort of this interesting sort of use of a collection of characters that for whatever reason, they just stay in the basement right. all the time.
Also, one of the big reasons they stay in the basement in the British version is that they're played by the same actors as the ghosts who are upstairs because it's just it's a bit. But yeah, it is. And in the US version, they did the thing where they've got the one that comes up and is like, I'm going to stay up here now. And then she's up there for a while and she's really annoying and they finally get rid of her. In the US version, they also have basically college student who sleeps in the attic and wakes up every once a year or something like that. Like
high school student who died on the way to prom because of a chainsaw murderer
at the prom. Yeah. That's it. So, but again, it's that thing where they can expand the world, but having the people down in the basement, it can be funny. And then the soldiers out in the outbuilding is a similar thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where they can expand. Mm-hmm. That was what I was sort of saying about, like, you can expand this world if you want to, but then you do have to deal with the consequences. But it's very funny. And it's played for laughs, like initially in the UK version, because Mike goes down there and oh, there are ghosts. There are so many ghosts down there that we didn't even know were down there. But then the show does the turn where some of those ghosts know how the heater works, how the furnace works. Mm-hmm. And he's going to blow up the house, basically. But when Allison is down there, she can relay his instructions. And that's the thing that I think convinces Mike that they're real, is that she's able to tell him exactly the right process to get the heater on and off.
That joke played well in both versions. They did the same joke in both versions. So yeah, it was really well done.
Sometimes I do find, like, not having watched it for a little while, I'm like, did that happen?
Right.
Because there's so many, they can play out and they're the same, but they're not the same. And, I really appreciate how each of them are an interpretation of a different culture. And a few, like, I think last week, Erica and our local friends here were sort of joking about what would the cast of a Canadian ghost show be, which entertained us for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. Entirely.
Yeah, because it's different from both of them.
Wow. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why not?
How dare you?
Another version.
You got a British. The Heather was saying that she recommends Bake Off and Ghosts. There's a US and a UK version of Bake Off. There's also a Canadian version. So now we need our Canadian ghosts.
Oh, it's true.
There you go. It is.
I think it's to CBS's credit that they, like, almost immediately when the British show came out, they're like, that is a great premise. We would like that. And it's borne out because it's a huge hit. Like, it's a really highly rated TV show, and was very rapidly, which is kind of funny. So,
again, and they're so respectful of the original show. Yeah. Like, the creators have such good things to say. And then they even took the actor who plays Thomas, the poet, in the UK version and had him come over and do a spot, basically playing the Scoutmaster character in.
Right.
In like a TV, like a documentary on dumb deaths, right. Because there were a lot of dumb deaths near this house. Yes.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. See? Yep.
Which is just, that was delightful. I think I read that they had originally thought about asking the actor who actually plays Pat in the UK version if he wanted to come and do the P. And they were like, he's like, no, that's too much. That's too close. So they ended up getting
too on the nose.
Yep. So they got the guy that plays Thomas instead, which ended up being great.
For 2022 Comic-Con, they had a pretty big offsite for Ghosts. And they had a whole setup that was like outdoor camp. Where you could go and you could do archery and you had fortune telling and you had several things where you got to collect badges. And then depending on how many badges you collected, you got to have prizes like scarves and keychains, and they gave away arrows that you put around your neck. It was very funny. And then they had a screening and we were hoping we would get a preview of the next season, but all we got was time before. But it was just at sunset and they gave away s'mores and popcorn, and it was really great offsite. And I believe, which has no basis in any actual knowledge, but I believe that the offsites that the production companies and the outlets are willing to put on have something to do with someone's spirit and someone's personality somewhere. It was a great, really fun, really generous offsite, and it matched the show very well. So I believe that all the way through, this show is a lot of fun. I haven't read anything about what it's like to be on set, but I believe that it's probably just a hoot. And what we see in the front of the camera is probably what's happening behind the camera, too. It was one of my favorite offsites that I've been to. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I think what we, you know, most of all, I hope that the impression we've given thus far in this podcast is that if you're a fan of, especially, I think, sort of like genre fiction, fantasy kind of stuff, you know, like horror fantasy. I don't know. It is a rare show. Like The Good Place was kind of like this. I think that might have been the last sitcom we talked about. And there is a connection because Brandon Scott Jones, who is Isaac, was in The Good Place in the last couple of seasons. It is like that in the sense that it is taking a sitcom format, but using a premise that allows for, you know, rules that are not the kind of regular mundane rules of the world. And I think that that's one of its great advantages. I love that it has reached an audience. Now the, like I said, it's going to go on until they can't pay the actors anymore. So a million years, cause it's CBS, but, the UK version ended, which is a very like them, right? Like typical, British people to do short seasons and then just say we're done after 34 episodes. If you don't want to know how it ends, you can, you know, you should hide your ears at this point. But I know that Heather at least had a story about the ending of the UK Ghost. I was spoiled. I looked on the Wikipedia page, so I know how it ends. It's fine. It's a sitcom. It doesn't really matter to me. But if it does matter, you could hide your ears now. But Heather, do you want to talk about how it ends?
Yeah. So it ends with a Christmas special, which is not usually how British, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not, even with the Brits, it's not how I think of ending an entire, after five seasons of a series. And it's somewhere in my brain, I knew it was ending, but not enough of my brain knew it was ending. And it was, I don't know, January 12th. And I thought, I need to watch this because, you know, it's already January 12th. I will be out of the holiday season if I don't watch this soon. I had not watched any of the season five at all. And I thought, it won't matter. What does it matter? I'll just watch it. And it'll be fine. And then I'll go back and catch up. Oh, guys, not only was it this season ending, but oh my gosh, like all the things happened. I watch and she comes home with a baby. What? And then it ends with the series ends and they sell the thing. I thought, worst choice ever to skip.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had a worse choice to skip.
I believe.
Than this time.
From what I've read is the way it ends is that they do basically sell the house, sell the hotel, but they come back to visit the ghosts.
They do. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, it's quite beautiful. It is a really moving, beautifully done. It's subtle. It's sweet. It is a perfect end. It's a perfect end.
Annette and I both watched it today. And it felt very British to me. Well, first of all, the British version has Christmas specials every year because that's a very British thing to do. And like you said, Jason, ending a show, definitely a British thing as well. But they also did the British thing where, yes, they ended it, but they left it open-ended enough that they could come back for Christmas specials literally every year if they wanted to. So I feel like that was a nice sort of like, it was beautifully done. I didn't want it to end that way, but the fact that they left it open for hijinks at Christmas at least was a bit of a salve. And I do have to say that, you know, season five leads up to that episode very well. So if you are watching in order, it doesn't maybe feel like quite such a shock. You're like, okay, this all makes sense.
It does. I think they also left it open for a great spinoff. There is a whole new show waiting right there if they want to run it.
I like the idea that you could have them, they, you know, that Mike and Allison take their regular suite for Christmas at the hotel and
every year
hijinks ensue and it's a Christmas special. Cause that's the other thing about British shows. They end, but also then they end and then 8 years later they come back and do a Christmas special. Right. That's a thing they do.
Yeah.
Well, and Ghost Hotel, right? Is sitting right there if they want to do it.
Ghost Hotel. Sure.
And I think the ending, like, yes, they sell the hotel, but they do it in a way, I don't want to give necessarily everything away, but they do it in a way with so much heart and so much character base that you couldn't get without having all of the character arc of the last five seasons. And I was watching it and totally crying. And,
same too.
And like, oh, this is so beautiful. Mm. I love it. So like, yeah, it's not necessarily I want them to sell the hotel, but they do it for the best of reasons. And yeah, it just makes you have all of the feels and just mm-hmm. in a way that feels really completed and like a nice bow on the whole series.
Well, I look forward to the U.S. Ghost finale in 2030.
Right. Yeah, I'm like wondering if they'll do the same thing or not.
They might. They might.
I mean, they've done a lot of the other same things, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's true. It is funny. Also, if you're confused about this, because of the writer's strike. So first off, all the Ghost UK episodes up until the next to last season were on Max, but then they went off. And the reason they went off is CBS, because of the writer's strike, was like, we don't have anything to show on our airwaves. So they showed the UK version of Ghosts on CBS, which is,
oh, wow.
I would say, super clever of them.
Yeah.
But I think they only showed the first two seasons. That's all that's available on Paramount Plus. And it is funny. They took the Christmas special and showed it at Christmas time. So that season two actually was like, they showed like one or two episodes, then the Christmas special, and then the rest of season two, which is fine. Cause you know, there's not really a lot of order and arc that's going on. And they have a Christmas episode and they're airing at Christmas time. Why not do that? But I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if they're going to wait and like maybe show them in the summer or something when the other show is off or what. But Americans right now, I think, can only watch the first two seasons of the UK version plus all 9,000 episodes from the first 2 years of the American version.
Right. In Canada, Paramount Plus has all five seasons and the end.
So does we have it freely available on our CBC Gem app, which is where...
Nice.
I got it for free and they advertised the crap out of it when it first came out. So I started watching the UK version immediately because it was just like, obviously Ghost, everything. I'm going to love this. So I was on board in seconds and loved it.
Yeah. And I can't, you know, but recommend both. Like I think they're both different in interesting ways, but also both very good. And having come from the CBS version where I was just like, okay, well, let's just see. And Lauren had watched the UK version and we watched the CBS version together. And I'm like, this is a really good show, right? Like there are not very many traditional sitcoms that I watch anymore. I'm like, no, this is actually good. And then watching the UK version, I'm like, oh, like, yeah, it's different, but also, and very British, but also really good. So,
unless you really like, if you really bounce off of British humor, you might not like the British version.
That's okay.
If you really don't like American
CBS
style
sitcoms, sure.
Yeah, like I watched the UK version with Steven, and I watched the CBS version by myself because he tried and he just couldn't do it.
That's fine. I think they're both very good representatives of what they are.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you'll get 90,000 episodes of the American one. And it'll be a little more, what did we say? That it's a little more zany?
Yeah.
Wacky.
A little more wacky.
It's wacky and the other one's silly. Yes.
And the other one
is. We have the wacky versus silly.
What have we not talked about the various ghosts that we should talk about before we wrap it up? Anything?
Well, I haven't had the chance to watch the later seasons of the British version. So I don't know if they've explored the world. I know, Jason, we kind of talked about that. But the fact that we get several interactions with Sam and Jay's neighbor, who is formerly or forever known as Cousin Larry.
Totally.
And
I was so excited.
Yes, but like, you know, so Bjorn, Thor's son, lives there. But also a whole other host of ghosts live there.
Yes.
So every time they go over to that house, there are so many different characters that we get to interact with, and some are they're almost like NPCs in video games where we see them, we don't interact with them at all, but we take stock that they're there, and we know that at some point we probably will wind up talking to them or learning their story, or there'll be some kind of subplot. The other thing, kind of anecdotally, that is funny to me or interesting to me is just how many people have died in these locations over the years that have had lives that were unfulfilled enough to make a decision, right? Like all of these purgatory, existing people, like how many people were there actually that died? Like what's the ratio?
And I mean, since we're in spoiler territory, another bold thing that the UK version did that it took a while for the US version to do is that one of the main characters gets sucked off at some point in the season. And you're just like, oh, my gosh, they're gone. I can't believe it. And the cliffhanger at the end of season two of the US version is Sam and Jay in the car and Sam sees the light from some ghost getting taken up to heaven. So I like that's an interesting way for a character to leave a show too. Like, you know, they were already dead, so you think you're gonna have them forever, but wait, no, if they get enough character development or whatever, then they might be gone,
or they could be sent down to hell. Like
that was one of my favorite, like I yelled out loud when that happened because I was not expecting
it. Because in the American version, there is a vault in the basement and it's ghost resistant.
It's iron, I think, or lead.
Yeah.
Iron or lead. Yeah.
And Hetty's awful husband has been trapped inside it for all of this time. And he goes to hell.
He's awful.
And then he comes back and is like tormenting them and then goes back down to hell. also, I touched on this earlier, but I wanted to mention this because we didn't talk about it too much. I am fascinated by how both shows have to deal with the history of the region in which the show is set. So in the American version, first off, there has to be an indigenous character, right? Like there has to be. And so we have Sass. We have Thor, which is funny because like Vikings in North America is like, okay, because they want to have some other kind of deep time characters. But it is interesting. And that because it's the US, our history isn't very, like North American history doesn't go back very far. So then we've got a bunch of eras, but relatively recent eras. And the British version, they've got a caveman, and then they've got a bunch of people from a bunch of distinct British historical periods. And I was struck by that interesting difference that in some ways, other than Robin is a deep time character. Everybody else is sort of like spread out over English history. But in the US version, you've got Thor and Sass, who have been there a very long time, and then everybody else is like from the last 120 years or whatever. It's just interesting choices.
Well, the headless guy is pretty old, right? He's like been there.
Right. There's the revolutionary. So he's been over there for 200 years.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But then the rest of them are less than 150 years. Well, that's kind of what I was saying before.
Our history is just younger.
You know, like I don't know or recognize the time period. So like, I don't know what period of time Kitty is from in the UK version versus the one who died in the witch trials. I can't remember her name, but the one who smells like smoke when you walk through her.
Mary. Yeah, she's more like Middle Ages where, Kitty is...
she's Georgian, I think.
Kitty's Georgian, so okay. Late 1700s.
So, and then where is the lady of the house?
Humphrey?
Lady.
She's like the great... So she's probably like 1800s?
Edwardian, yeah, she died in 1912.
Oh, okay.
1912. Okay.
So late 19th century.
Yeah,
and Humphrey was around during the Catholic rebellion.
I think that's an interesting premise that as an American producer of this show, you have to make some decisions based on American history, and they set it in New York, and they're like, "All right, what can we do?" And then it's like, "Well, that gives us revolutionary." If you set it in California, honestly, you wouldn't have as many layers as you do on the East Coast because there was more exploration earlier. And so you can have more different layers of history that you're all kind of like sticking together. And that's not like the point of the show, but it is part of the texture of the show, is you've got to have people who could plausibly have been in that area in various eras so that they can kind of bump against each other. But I just think it was an interesting set of creative decisions they had to make to build those characters out. And they're not a one-to-one from the British show. Also, I enjoy that Sass is like super modern. He's the one who's like, no, this modern era is great. Like he's explaining to the other ghosts how stuff works. I think that's also a fun thing that he is going against the kind of like expected trope. You would expect a long ghosted, not long lived, long ghosted indigenous person, a Native American man, to be like, oh, he's going to bring the wisdom and all that. No, he likes to smell food. Yeah. He likes to watch TV.
He lies about trees. Yeah,
he's really messy. Sass is very messy.
Yeah.
He's the drama lava. Yes, he lives for the drama, which is, I have mixed feelings about that because I like it because it subverts expectations. But also at the same time, it's like, yes, you have one indigenous person and the only episode that they really get to reflect their culture is him telling a lie about his culture. Right. Like it feels a little bit like, I hope that they do a little bit more with him.
Yeah, it feels like there's more layers of the onion to be peeled away there,
right?
Because anytime you get one of these characters who's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm cool and I'm with it. The way that both of these shows work, right, is like, that person's got baggage, right? Like they got baggage. They're a ghost. And it's in the premise, right? There's something keeping them here.
Of course they have not dealt
with it. So when I think about how sometimes happy-go-lucky Sass is, I think, there's more to be done with him, I think. I imagine that'll happen. Also, they'll have 1,000 episodes, so they'll have to deal with it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I also enjoy how in the first episode, I think of both of them, where the original owner of the house is very old and she dies and they're all crowded around the bed and just waiting to see, is this person going to stay or are they going to disappear?
Are they going to stay and disappear?
And they briefly pause and then get sucked up.
Yeah, that's right. And so they're like, oh no. Also very useful in that because it's funny when they get confronted with modern things. And that only works if you set in the premise that the person who lived there before was a very old person who was mostly isolated from the world. So that when the young couple comes in, the ghosts are all like, what is, like, Wi-Fi, laptops, what is happening now?
They've never seen
now?
The TV.
TV.
Right. Yeah, TV.
Like, they didn't watch TV. Right.
Exactly. So you got to set it up that way so they really feel like they're out of time. It's really cleverly established in order to get all of those kind of jokes in the mix from the beginning. Very smart. All right. Watch ghosts, everybody. That's what we're saying. Go, you know, British, American, both. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff.
It really is. Yeah. And then the new season starts February 15th.
Yeah, that's right. And on CBS. and then it will continue until the 2030s. thank you to my panel for being here to talk about various ghosts with us. We've haunted you long enough and we're going to leave now and go back to the basement or wherever we live, wherever we haunt. Cicero Holmes, thank you for being here.
I turn the red valve. Thank you very much.
Annette Wierster, thank you.
I'm just going to go stick my head in the fridge and go smell some cheese.
Smell that cheese. Heather Berberet, thank you.
Thanks. I hope to not see you hanging around the house in the next life.
And Erica Ensign, thank you.
I think I've been banished and I need to go see if that old outhouse still has a roof.
And thanks everybody out there for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you next time.